utilize him. I think it's going to be in the passing game more than the running game. I think that if they're going to use somebody like that, it's going to end up being Will, because Will has shown in the past that he can play in that, you know, H-back role. He can play it well. You can have him out wide. I think Nix is more of an inside blocking guy. Nix, he has shown up and he has played well for what we've asked of him. But I think if it's going to be anybody, it's going to be Will.
Yeah, Will Allen, one of those guys I had a conversation with a couple years ago, and he was relatively disappointed. He said, look, he says, I just want to win for the fans. That's really all I want to do.
Absolutely.
There's nothing more that I would like to see in for us to get into the playoffs. And here they are. I'd like to maybe converse with Vince a little bit this year and see what his thoughts are about getting into the playoffs after being blanked out for the last couple of years. So,
right.
So when it comes to the 2016 draft and moving forward, there's a lot of great options. Of course, nobody wants to talk about Ben Roethlisberger, you know, having an heir apparent, but there needs to be one because Michael Vick is gone, Gronkowski is gone. You have a lot of holes to fill. You have to fill Timmons' contract. You have to shore up McClendon. You have to do a lot of additions and subtractions. Do you foresee them getting it done with Lawrence Timmons and reworking the contracts they need to?
I would like them to because I think that he does a lot. And I think he's one of the most underrated players in the entire league. I think that he, maybe not this season so much because this season has been kind of a down season for him. But I just... Yes, I mean, as much as I want to say yes, I don't know if they're going to go with someone in the first round, like out of USC, Ravens. I think that he playing next to Shazier on the inside is an option. I think that they need to keep someone like LT on the roster because of what he is as a leader, as a player. I think they need that. But when you look at who's, you know, you have Ryan Shazier, you have Sean Spence, you have Vince Williams, and I think that that's solid depth, but you need someone like LT to play on the inside too. I mean, because when you watch him play, he just does so much so well, and I don't think that you can really replace that with guys like Sean Spence or Williams.
Well, we're going to see what this Steeler team is actually made of when it comes to, you know, playing the Cincinnati Bengals, because again, they've been on the Steelers' tail for a long time. And the fact that they're able to get into the postseason, the bigger question for Cincinnati is whether or not they can get it done. They haven't been great at the playoffs. They're one and done practically every single year. And with that comes the big question, can Andy Dalton, who's been, you know, relatively injured, had a broken thumb against the Steelers the last time they played, it was on Stephon Tuitt's knee.
That he
plunged into, and I looked at that play and I said, what are you doing?
why would you try to tackle someone of that size as a quarterback? I mean,
the guy is huge, and then you run into him by trying to block him to the ground.
Yeah.
Leave that for your offensive lineman, so you can lose a tackle, but you can't lose yourself
as a part
of that lineup. And then you have A.J. McCarron, who for the most part has been, you know, moving the Bengals forward, not playing relatively well, but again, without first team reps, you know, what do you expect?
Right.
So moving forward in this big, as it were before today, a huge hodgepodge of AFC, you know, powers B getting into the postseason. And here comes the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts are 9-6 also. But again, they had to have a lot of things happen in order for them to get in. And well, they're not.
Yep.
So you really have to think about, you know, where you're at, how you put yourself in position. At the beginning of the year, I told myself, you know what, this is going to be an 11-5 team. I was so close, yet so far away because I didn't know how bad they were going to be in press coverage.
Right.
Giving up points, giving up little, you know, up and overs to line. And there were some balls batted here and there, but again, nothing consistent. I almost thought that the pass rush wasn't consistent as well. Where do you see the Steelers moving from here with... do they win against Cincinnati?
Yes, and this is kind of sound biased, and I don't mean it to, but when you have someone like Ben who has won two rings, this is not new to him. And I haven't heard whether or not Andy Dalton will in fact play in this game. I don't think he will play in it, which might not be a bad thing if you're the Bengals, but you have someone like AJ who has only really played in the last four games. You know, he was, and then as you're saying, he has no first team reps. He's kind of walking in here cold, and now, and yes, it will be at home for him, but he's going up against Ben Roethlisberger, and the offensive game plan for the Steelers is going to be to air it out, and they're going to have to force AJ to play the kind of offense that they want, and they're going to have to force him to play or throw the ball rather 40 odd times. I don't think that when you make someone like that who's in his, I think it's his second year, third year, play against someone like Ben and have to throw it 40 times and have to carry the offensive load on his back, that he'll be able to. And I think that there's an issue with the Bengals offense in that there's so much talent on it, but they never really utilize it in the best way. And that's not necessarily a knock on Hugh Jackson. It's just when you watch this offense play, and they played, I think it was Houston, and they lost. It was just a bad game plan. And a team like the Steelers walking in there that knows how to win in the playoffs, this isn't their first time here. You have guys like Mike Tomlin, you have guys like Roethlisberger who have won titles going in against Marv, who has never won a playoff game, and against someone like AJ, who has never even been in the playoffs. I just don't think that the Bengals want this game. I think it's a nightmare, actually. I think that we're the last team that they want to play without Andy Dalton.
Yeah, exactly. And breaking news on this, apparently, as suspected, not that you're going to be shocked, so don't hold on to your seat too tightly, but you have Mike Petting, who's just been released by the Browns. Surprise, surprise.
What a surprise.
I'm really shocked about that. You know, speaking of the Browns, are they going to ever get it together? I mean, you have Haslam. I mean, the coaching carousel goes around. I can see this animated piece of ceramic, you know, art rotating around with the circus music rolling, with pictures of other head coaches on the heads of these horses.
Right.
Being, you know, sent out to pasture. Are they ever going to get it together?
Not with Haslam there. They're going to need somebody. I mean, the issue that I've seen with them, and they're already looking at a new head coach without a GM. That's not how you win as a football team. You have to hire a GM first and then let him pick his own head coach. And they've done this now a couple of different times, and it's never worked out. And it's just insanity that they've never been able to find a head coach or a GM worth anything, and they're just going to keep going around in this vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle. You're right. It is a vicious cycle. And on top of that, and Haslam fired Ray Farmer. Again, no surprise
right
there. What do they do to get back into a winning way? Oh, wait a minute. It's called stability.
Right.
Make sure that your head coach, your general manager, and these guys are a very solid quality. Now, don't forget Dallas Cowboys with Jerry Jones was the micromanager of the Cowboys for a very long time. I had this conversation with some guys on Twitter, Nick Ferguson being one of, you know who he is, but really nice guy. Okay. But we were talking about how the Cowboys always in the conversation of when are they going to be relevant again. Well, obviously more relevant than the Cleveland Browns, but again, having the stability in the front office, having the stability at the head coaching position, over managing, which is known as micromanaging. Maybe Haslam should get a memo or a book on that, but it's just nothing short of diabolical when you're trying to build a franchise. It reminds me of Draft Day, and Draft Day was about the Browns.
Yep.
And what they're going to do and how they got these massive, you know, guys with these last-minute trades, this and the other. That's not reality for them. If that was reality for them, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So Moving forward, do you foresee the Browns doing anything formidable in next year or years to come?
Not next year. I mean, well, they really want Adam Gase, and I think that that would be a really good first step. I don't know if Adam Gase would coach there. I don't know if that's his first choice. I don't think it's anybody's first choice, but I want to say yes because they need something positive. I just can't see it. I mean, Haslam, he has his hand in everything, and it's all bad. And if he can't see that, I don't think so. It's just brutal there.
Well, you know, there's a lot of relocation. There's a lot of teams talking about moving and packing up, and one of those teams are the LA Raiders and San Diego Chargers and the St. Louis Rams. And from what I understand, in the NFL, you need to have a majority rule ownership-wise throughout the NFL in order to commit to getting this team, to helping this team move here. So each team would divvy up money, essentially, to these teams to get them to relocate, and talks about how dividing this team up, just like Paul Brown Stadium's divide against Cincinnati's, divided against Cleveland. Where do you see the next moves coming from in regards to any team coming to Los Angeles?
I think that everything that I've seen and from everything that I've read, it'll be the Rams and the Chargers are the two teams that will go. They were talking about, as you were just saying, they were talking about sharing a stadium with the Rams and the Chargers. And I don't know if I like the idea of sharing a home field like that. But I think that that's where they go. I think that when you have an owner like Stan Kroenke, I think I'm saying that right, but who desperately wants to move there, I don't think there's anything you can do to make that not happen. And I think that there have already been a few owners that said that we want a team there. We just need to see some sort of viable plan. I think at some point that they have to, they need at least one team. Whether or not I'll end up with one, I'm not sure, but it'll be for sure the Chargers move over there. That I'm sure of.
Well, I'm from this area. I'm in the Southern California market,
okay.
And what I'm looking at here is you have different teams with the same goal. Every team has the same goal, and that's to win a championship.
Right.
In their respective stadiums, or where they've been, or where they've gone to, they just don't seem. I mean, I don't know. You can't use the stadium as an excuse. Okay, so the fans have crappy seats, or they have to use restrooms. I remember talks about the Vet, back in the day in Philadelphia, where there were leaks everywhere, and I watched NFL films about it. I said, man, who would even want to play there?
Yeah.
Who would even want to be there? And then you have the polar opposite when you're talking about Three Rivers. The Three Rivers was this monument. People were crying when this thing finally just turned into a pummel.
Right.
People were bawling, and they were upset, and everybody wanted to take a piece of it home with them, and some people still do. A lot of Yinzers, yes, I said Yinzers out there, actually have actually taken a lot of these memories home with them. And some are just in the form of visual and actual memories that they'll retain forever. And so with that being said, Heinz Field seems to be one of those places. Unfortunately, the playoffs don't go through Heinz Field, but I guarantee you'll be able to sit there and watch it on the big screen, because Heinz Field and the Steelers just like to do that for their fans.
Absolutely.
And a big boost from the Steelers organization, speaking of organizations who have gone beyond what I thought was going to be something relative. They brought in a Steelers Nation Unite, which is a new segment for fans and fans only, whereas they didn't have that before, showing players more up close and personal so that way you know who they are. Besides the gridiron, besides what they are able to portray on the field, it shows them what they're like off the field. I know a gentleman I had the pleasure of interviewing not once but twice, and Arthur Motes, who in fact had a fantastic game today.
Yes, he did.
And hats off to him. Arthur Motes, number 55, this guy just seems to be one of those all over the place. His wife's very engaging. He's very engaging. They're engaging together, and just a wonderful piece and addition to take of their own free time. They don't get paid to do this. This is something that they just kind of want to do for the fans, for very chosen people, and I'll get into dialogue with Arthur Motes at times, and his wife, and Just a real good family to have. And because of Steeler Nation United, I'm not trying to pump them up or anything, but because of that, fans are experiencing something they have never experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm only aware that Steeler Nation does. I'm not really too familiar with any other fan base, the Jets or Giants or Philly or what have you, mm-hmm. but I'm sure they have their own equivalents. From an outside perspective, and to not, I guess the right terminology would be a homer, is to discuss some of the pitfalls. And I think some of the pitfalls that they really need to look at as an organization, from an organizational standpoint, again, just my opinion, but this is what this show is all about, is, you know, the cutting of players, the acquisitions of players, Jacoby Jones. Oh, wait, did I say that out loud? Yes, I did.
That was a disaster. Oh, my goodness.
You know, that was a complete debacle. And people would say, you know, Dree Archer had no business being on the roster. I had the chance to meet him last year. Matter of fact, his interview is on therudogshow.com. What did you think about that move, you know, cutting Dree Archer in lieu of Jacoby Jones?
I think it made sense at the time. I think that because fans were wanting something out of Archer since he was a fairly high round pick, that they never really got on offense. I don't really think that he ever had the opportunity to do anything on special teams. When the move first happened, I was really, really excited about it. You can call me silly, you can call me this and that, but when it first happened, I thought, okay, we're finally going to have someone who can take it back to the house. Because Wheaton, he hasn't really shown that he can do that. Archer, he had a couple of flash in the pan type moments. But when we got him, I said, okay, well, we played against him with the Ravens. And when he was with the Ravens, there was a game, I think it was 2 years ago, where the only reason why we ended up missing the playoffs was because there was a 48-yard punt, I think was, that he took all the way back against us. So I thought that he would have that kind of impact for us. The sad reality of it is it just looked like the wheels had fallen off. And when I watched him, I mean, there was twice where he fumbled it and he got it back, but there was once that he didn't. And then it looked like age eventually caught up with him. And looking back on it now, maybe we should have kept Archer, but I think it's the fact that he didn't go anywhere else, and the fact that we haven't re-signed him, I think is, I don't know about that. I mean, after we cut him, I think that we should have had him back on the team. But that's just me.
Well, you know, look, first of all, Jacoby Jones has a tattoo of a Ravens. He has like a Ravens logo.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awful.
Right. So here you are, a guy, and I seen him on the sidelines, and I'm looking at him. I said, is this guy ever going to talk to anybody? You know, he had Antonio Brown sitting next to him. He was sitting next to a couple other players, Darius Hayward-Bey and some other guys, and he really had nothing to say. He wasn't really eyeballing anybody. He wasn't talking to anyone. There was no engagement whatsoever, and
right.
I think it was a very bad move. Look, keep Dree Archer. At least he can hold on to the ball.
Yeah,
at least
yeah.
give him that, okay?
It's all
he may not have been this... Yeah, exactly. That's why you signed him. If he's not going to be your RB, get blown over because he's a $1.05 soaking wet, that's different than being able to hold on to the ball. At least he has that fundamental down pat.
Right.
And the fact that the Ravens cut Jacoby Jones, and then you have San Diego cutting Jacoby Jones, that's kind of a trend.
Absolutely.
You would one would speculate if that was a soft spot in Tomlin's heart to say, you know what, I almost interfered with this guy. He could have ran a touchdown, this, that, and the other. So I'm going to give him a shot on the team. I just don't believe in my heart of hearts that he was a good fit for the team overall, and you should have kept Dree Archer.
Absolutely.
Nice guy. He's fast. He's quick. At least he doesn't traverse, and when he does, he gets some type of gain after the traverse motion on the field. And a very nice guy, and he held on to the ball. So imagine that, holding on to the ball, no negative yardage, no fumbles, no, I mean, you really have to think about this and say, what were you thinking, coach?
Archer was so fast, but he just couldn't, there was no real spot for him on the offense, which is fine, but you have to find a way to make his speed now some sort of factor. You have to find it, and they never really did, and they never really used him on offense. I don't know if it's because they couldn't hand him the ball, or when they did, he couldn't really do much with it. But he, as you were saying, he can hang on to the ball, which is all you can ask for when you're on special teams. And I don't know why. I don't know. I just it's a terrible move seeing it now, though.
So I'm going to get your prediction as we wrap this up. Do the Steelers go on to win their seventh Lombardi?
No. And I'll tell you why. I think they end up winning the AFC. I just, when you look at the NFC and you see a team like the Panthers, they are incredible everywhere. And, you know, Cam Newton is or will be the MVP. And then you look at that defense, Kuechly, Norman, Short. It's just they have so much talent everywhere that I want to say yes, I really do. But when you look at a team like the Panthers, like the Cardinals, I don't think so, sadly.
Well, I can tell you this much. When you're losing an RB heading into the playoffs, the Steelers have done it before, and they went on
right to
go very deep in the playoffs. I mean, they lost Willie Parker, and they lost DeAngelo Williams, and they really have to come together and make a determination whether or not to go into the closet, not only check on how Josh Harris is doing. Of course, I talked to Josh on a rudimentary basis, mm-hmm. but nevertheless, when you're talking about what they need to do in the run game to help give Ben some play action options, Will Johnson may end up having to be the guy that you most certainly go to, maybe with a split back with Todman or even Toussaint, depending on what situation you are downfield. As far as my prediction to win the Super Bowl, that's a really good question, and I hate to answer that for a couple reasons. First reason is right now, as it stands, the Steelers are not the solid pass coverage team that we've been able to see in the past. No, this is not Steel Curtain. This is not a relive moment of the Steel Curtain. I'm not living in the past. I'm looking towards the future. And right now, unless that pass coverage is shored up between now and the next time they play a down on the field, that they're able to recognize and understand that that is their bread and butter, to stop that pass and right to stop the run. And so unless they get those blitz schemes picked up, unless they put in the rotation, it brings me to another point with Brandon Boykin. Look, had that guy been in the lineup or at least rotated in on more of a frequent basis than he had up until recently, fans were screaming, "Where's Brandon Boykin?" or hashtag free Boykin. There's a lot of conversation saying, look, you lost a fifth-round pick to a guy you're not playing. Why not? Blake is getting burnt like toast on the outside. Put a guy who can do the outside and the inside in a nickel or 4-3, do something else, because
absolutely,
what you're doing is not working. Where do you see Brandon Boykin being as a part of the Steelers secondary moving forward?
They have to start using him more than they were in the first 12 weeks. They're going to have to play him. I don't know if he's necessarily, or if he can start on the boundary. I would say no to that. But if you put Will Gay and you put Ross Cocker on the outside and you have him on the inside, it's not a great team there, but it's not bad. And it's, at the very least, it means that Blake is not on the field, because it just seems like it's routine now that when he's on the field, they just pick on him, they throw at him, and he just cannot stop the pass at all. And it's frustrating. So I think that they're going to have to move him into the inside. They're going to have to play him there every down, and they're going to have to find a way to use him, because they have to now.
Right. They definitely do. They're going to have to get it done, because when you're looking at it from a draft perspective, they really need to find out who these guys are in the offseason and a training camp to find out if there's anybody else they need to go after, maybe in free agency. Or, what do you do with Cortez Allen? You sunk a lot of money into him. Do you restructure the contract? How do you go about justifying releasing this guy?
I know, and he was supposed to be like a key part of this team, and now he's on IR, and there are all kinds of stories whether or not he's actually hurt or not. I don't know what happened there fully. I don't think anybody knows what fully happened there, but that looks like a disaster contract now too.
Right. Well, again, we don't want dead money.
Right.
That's negative on the sheets. It doesn't look good at the end of the day. I just don't see them making any more negative moves in relation to, you know, contract negotiations or what players will work or what won't work based on a monetary amount. Look, if you perform, you deserve to keep your spot. If you don't perform, you're gone.
Absolutely.
And to be honest with you, sentimentality, and I've said this before on various audio segments and shows that I've been on, sentimentality will kill the sport. It will kill the ability for you to win games, despite whether or not your fan base wants this person or that person. It really doesn't matter. Case in point, 2 years ago, I interviewed Josh Morrow. He was a DE out of Stanford. Nobody, not ESPN, not Todd McShay, nobody picked Josh Morrow to be picked up by the Steelers in any capacity whatsoever. No radar, no discussion, no talk, no nothing. I went live stating that they would pick up Josh Morrow, not because I'd interviewed him, but because when I looked at his film, I recognized that he has a pass rush talent, and it's a consistent one. Mm-hmm. He has a solid motor, good hands, good eyes. I had a chance to interview him at Steelers training camp while he was there. And he just wanted to play. He didn't care who he was playing for, but the fact that he was here, he was grateful to do so. His dad, being a pastor, me and him had a conversation as well. And when I interviewed him, Josh, he was so humbled, and he was very determined, and he was going to get a shot in the NFL, but wasn't sure where. He just wanted to play at the end of the day. When he was released, or something happened, I don't know quite what happened necessarily, but something between his agent and Steelers didn't go over very well, and in turn, there he is with next to a former Steeler who is now a linebacker coach in Larry Foote, number 50. Probably a discussion at some point later on whether he gets in the Hall of Fame as a Steeler or not,
mm-hmm.
Or could go in as a coach, just like the former defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau will. Josh Morrow just has those skill sets. He's doing great in Arizona right now. Matter
Absolutely.
Of fact, I think that game is still on. But he wasn't on the radar, and now that the Steelers cut him, during the training camp sessions, now he's playing for another team, but with a better record because of other pieces in place. That's a whole nother conversation, but still one of those teams where they're getting handled by Seattle. So I think that Seattle really, it's taking it to them right now, but still Arizona's comparable. They're able to come back. They're still in the playoff picture. So doing a lot of good things. So with that being said, Steelers will go into the playoffs, whether or not they win a Super Bowl, I don't really know about that. Again, a lot of weaknesses on the D, some weaknesses in the O. Ben's decision-making is questionable at best, and I call it and I tell it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, Connor, hey, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Again, if you guys have not heard of The Point of Pittsburgh, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, we're on Twitter. It's at The Pittsburgh, and then if you want to contact me at all, it's at CDISTED. It's a fairly small site right now, but it's everything. It's Pirates, it's Steelers, it's Penguins, and it's just a lot of fun.
Well, good to know. Hey, thanks for coming on, and we'll probably do this again depending on whether or not the Steelers can get in the Super Bowl, and then we'll have another conversation as to how they got there.
Absolutely. I certainly hope so. I just can't see it, that's all.
No, look, proof is in the pudding, and they need to eat a lot of it, because right now they really need to prove to themselves that they can get it done and not worry about other teams and not being codependent on other teams to lose in order for us to get in. Unfortunately, well, not us, but the Steelers, but you know what I mean.
Right, right.
And with that being said, Connor Easton, thank you so much for coming on. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Rudy Rudog Reyes on the Rudog Show.